Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Jay Cardiello, and Jay is an entrepreneur and personal trainer in the health and wellness space. He served as a coach in the NFL and the MLB, and he has worked with some of the biggest names in entertainment like 50 Cent, J-Lo, and Sofia Vergara. He is a TEDx speaker. He's authored two best-selling wellness books. But what I love most about Jay is his ability to have all those incredible accomplishments, but then take it down and be vulnerable about some of the most difficult times in his life, like he did in this episode. We talked about him laying in a bed in Arkansas where he had a traumatic injury that forced him to almost leave his athletic career behind. We spoke about how he met 50 Cent, and we even touched on his morning routine, his incantation that he does, and we saw it, a performance of that, of what that looks like. We also spoke about the death theory, and I tremendously enjoyed getting to feel Jay's positivity. His just the way he communicates is really enjoyable for me, and I hope you enjoy it as well. If you have any thoughts about this episode, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda. And please do me a favor and share this with one person you think would enjoy it as well. Or just make your Instagram story or share it on Twitter. It would mean the world to me if you enjoyed it. So without further ado, here is Jay Cardiello.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Jay, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time today. And I'd love to start with you laying in the bed in Arkansas, and doctors telling you, you know, your athletic career would be over, you're going to be stuck in a sedentary life. And I don't know if this happened all in one day, but just take me back to that moment, how that felt, and just reflecting back on that compared to where you are today.
Sure. It's a great question. So it was 1996, and it was during the winter and spring track season, and I was at the University of Arkansas, and I was practicing and practicing and practicing that day, and I was really fatigued, and I just wanted to do one more jump. I always like to say I like to leave practice or whatever I do on a good note, and if the practice wasn't going very well for me, but I figured, hey, let me just get one more, and that one more, I ran down the runway as fast as possible, and I slipped on the board, and what happened was the trajectory of the jump, I went off to the left too far and put my foot out to protect me from falling off the runway. And it put a natural break on my body, and I heard crack in my spine. And I just fell right to the track, and I got up. And when I got up, I noticed my leg had been dragging behind me. And my leg went completely numb, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm paralyzed on my right side. But what had transpired is that I cracked the coccyx in half, and the discs went forward and the vertebrae went backwards. And I remember just sitting there going, oh, you know, it's nothing. It's just a pulled muscle or something. So went home, rested, and went to the training room the next day. And they had said, you got to go for an MRI. And they then sat me down when they got the results back and said, you know, listen, your track career is over. Your career here at the University of Arkansas is over. And, I, like a little child, it's going to choke me up now. I just cried my eyes out. And I remember, you know, I always say, like, my life was, I look at my life like a tree, and all the branches are aspects, and the trunk of my tree was track and field at the time. And when that came crashing down, I felt I had nothing. And when the doctors told me and the trainers told me that everything was over, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life at that point. And I had to go for spinal fusion surgery. I wound up getting two spinal fusions, one on my neck and then one in my lower back. And it was one of the most humbling experiences that I've ever went through in my life.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, Danny, it was very hard for me. And then when I went for the surgeries, it was at that point that I realized that, you know, some doctors saying you're probably going to walk with a limp for the rest of your life, or you may even not be able to walk correctly. And when anyone tells me I can't in life, I always say, you know, I have to find another way. I have to find a new strategy. So it was 6 months living in a body brace and various surgeries, as I mentioned. And it was definitely one of the lowest times in my life, both mentally and physically, but more so mentally. But it was at that time that I started reading. It was at that time that I really got to know who I was and what I was capable of, not only as a man, but as a human being. And I remember the first day I took off my brace, I just said, let me just go for it. And I went for a 10-foot jog, and it was just the most exhilarating thing that ever had happened in my life. It was such a great feeling. So, you know, whenever people tell you you can't, whether, you know, if you think of my friend Eric Legrand, the kid from Rutgers who broke his spine, you know, he still has that motto, believe, and he still believes it. And I always tell him each and every time I speak with him, hey, listen, you're going to walk again. You're going to walk again. It's not what doctors say. It's not what people say. It's what you say that really puts the period or exclamation point on your life.
What did you read at that time, and what were you filling your mind with?
Mm-hmm. So it was actually, it's interesting. It was, you know, a lot of people don't know this about me. Some people do, but I'm very big into my faith. So it was at that time I accepted my role as a Christian. And so I surrounded myself with a lot of prayers. I was surrounding myself with a great church group. And then what I did in those 6 months that I was laying in bed, I actually pretended like I was going to school, because I couldn't go to school. So I pretended I was going to class every day. So every day I woke up, I read, and I started getting into motivational reading, reading Tony Robbins, reading neurolinguistic programming, learning about Jim Rohn, and just learning about the great motivators in life. And what sparked to me was that each one of these people, you know, I always had three tragic moments in my life, but I always say each one of these people, they always had this tragedy where they triumphed over. And people have to realize it's not what people say. It's not how the world defines you. It's how you define yourself. And I always say, and it's you want to leave that legacy. You don't want to have somebody else write your script or have someone else write your history. You want to write it for yourself. So I really got heavily involved in the Bible at that point, but I really got involved with NLP, neurolinguistic programming, Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, and even the I think it was John Osteen before Joel, his father. So I started really getting heavily involved with that.
And what was the most impactful message or idea that from one of those people that you carried with you as a way to remember what you're going through? And was there a specific thing where you're like, wow, that learning that was what really allowed me to take control of my mind or take control of the situation in a way that I otherwise wouldn't have?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say probably the biggest person in my life at that point and the biggest person I was spending the most time with was my father. He was my first mentor. And there's a story that I always like to tell. I told it on the Gary Vee Show and I tell a lot of people, is that we were watching, I was 12 years old and we were watching football one day. It was a Sunday night and he asked me a question. He said, who's the best player you see on the screen? And we had one of those TVs where you got to hit the side just to get a picture and everything. And I said, you know, the quarterback. And I named all the positions. I even named the kicker. And he said, no, no. And I kept on saying, well, who's the best player on the screen? He's like, it's some guy in the stands. But through trials and tribulations, he gave up on himself. And now he's wearing somebody else's name on the back of his jersey when he could be on the field playing the game. Now, I didn't understand what he was saying at 12 years old. And he ended up by saying, never give yourself the opportunity to ask what if. And I always tell people that it's not that you're going to wind up on the NFL playing field or Major League Baseball playing field or whatever, but it's your playing field of life. We're all athletes in life. We're all part of this thing called life. And we're all playing a part of it. What happens so many times is that most of us die at the age of 25, but we continue to live. We never really go after our legacy. We never really go after our true passion, our true purposes in life. And then right before we die, we ask, what if? So that was probably one of the greatest things that someone has ever told me. And this story I live to this day, and that's what I tell people, is never give yourself the opportunity to ask what if. And then he also told me in another statement, he said, 5% of the people in this world make things happen, 15% watch things happen, and 80% don't know what the heck is going on. And he said, you better be one of those 5% that actually lives his life according to what his dreams are, not anybody else's.
Has there ever been a moment or time when you've been part of the 95%?
You know what? I would say each and every day. Each and every day. I wake up every morning and do my rituals. I'm part of that 5 a.m. club. But there are times, let's face it, we all think negatively and you know, 1,000 times a day. And I always have to say to myself, you know, I am powerful, I am worthy, I am strong. And those are the three mantras that I repeat to myself. So whenever anything sets in where that 95% is seeping into my brain, I always remember those three mantras and I repeat to myself over and over and over again just to get out of that negative framework and then get into a positive statement. So to answer your question, it's really almost every day it happens in my mind. It's just that I choose not to live it in my life.
And have of the people, of the many people you've trained and talked to over the years, what has been the best cases of taking somebody from the 95% to the 5%?
Wow. You know, well, I always think of the person who was at the who was at like the 10% and then became the 5%. And that was probably 50 Curtis Jackson. I learned not only so much from him, and I know we learned a lot from each other, but just how when I first came to him, he was, you know, 238 pounds and you know, something percent body fat, high 30s body fat. And what we did is that we learned how to sleep, how to do rituals, and we focused on that. And people are like, oh, you guys probably spend 10 hours in the weight room every day, or, you know, 2 hours in the weight room or whatever it is, and ate anything but salad. But that's not the truth. We focus on sleep and we focus on the positive mental aspects of life and enjoying life. And that's why I always tell people, I always put people on what we call a no diet plan, where it's not about food. Food is the habit, but not the root cause. So if I have to say it's one person, it was probably him who not only taught me so much, but I instilled him with the same lessons that my father taught to me.
And so you saw him become part of the 5%. You saw him chasing his dreams and being able to do things that he otherwise wouldn't have after starting working with him. But I want to talk about how you met him, right?
Sure.
You're a personal trainer at Clay in December 2005. One, how'd you get that job? Two, how'd that connection come to be?
That's a great question. So I had left sports. I was training NFL Major League Baseball for 10 seasons, and I left sports. And after my father passed, you know, my mentor, I was like, I quit. And there's nothing else I want to do. I want to leave sports and hang it up. And it was a good run. And I started selling ad space on radios at ESPN. And I looked good in a suit, but I didn't fit a suit. And I walked down the street one day, and I ran to this place called Clay, and I looked it up on the internet, and it was like a celebrity gym. And I was like, well, listen, you know what? Let me give this a run. And then I looked up who the best trainer in America was at the time, and it was Gunnar Peterson, the celebrity trainer. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to model what he does. And now we're friends, you know, wow. 15 years later. And I said, if I can do this, this is going to be my purpose in life, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. So I started working there, and I worked endless hours. And, you know, you always hear about people talking about the, you know, Elon Musk talking about the 100 hours a week. I was putting in 100 hours a week. I was doing 160 sessions a month, just training everyday people. And then one thing, I sparked the interest in 50's manager at the time, and he set it up for a meeting between us, and he said he has to get in shape for a boxing movie. The boxing movie never came to fruition, but the friendship did. So in 2005, I moved in with him, traveled for 4 years, living with him for 4 years, and then worked with him for 15. So it was that meeting that really just put me then in a place where I can now lead people down their journey and then also to make an impact in people's lives.
How do you spark the connection with his manager?
So it was through a mutual friend, and they said, you know, we have this young buck who's really hungry, and he's here. He's doing everything from cleaning the floors to training people. And it really is that. And to your listeners, it really is that. You know, sleep is very imperative. And I always tell people now I focus on getting that, you know, that's 6 to 8 hours of sleep a night. But at the point in the beginning of the grind, I was really only getting between 3 to 4 hours a night because I knew the end goal was what I wanted to do. So I do have a strong mindset, and it does take time, but I do have a strong mindset that whatever I focus on, I will become. And it's a double-edged sword for me because if I focus negatively, I do become negative in it. But I sparked an interest in a relationship that he had with somebody in the gym, and the connection was made, and the introduction was made, and the rest is history.
It's an unbelievable story. It's crazy how you could see the direct result of the hard work leading to something, a magical moment. And so you mentioned the morning routine before, and it's something you do every day. I know you do an incantation, you do gratitude, you do 100 push-ups, cold shower. I don't know if you still do that, but
yeah.
What's that like? How do you come to those habits and break it down for us, like on a morning when you don't necessarily want to do it?
Sure. It's every morning I don't want to do it. You know, sometimes you got to get up and it's cold and you got to jump in a cold shower, or a cold tub. When you start reading about people, NLP teaches this, you have to start modeling people. So if you want to be a great writer, find out who the great writers are and read about them. There's so much of an education you can get for late fees at a library than you can get at Harvard. And what I did is I just started reading about what people did. And I really look up to the icon Tony Robbins because he immerses himself first thing in the morning in rituals. And I figure if those rituals can work for him and what he's been through, they can work for not only me, myself, but anybody. So every morning I wake up between 5 a.m. and 5:15. And the first thing I do is gratitude. And then I say, God, I summoned you into my life today. And at that point, I do an incantation where I say, by December 31st, 2022, I, Jay Carter, will accomplish this by doing this, this, and this. I can see it, feel it, and believe it. And funny thing is, I got in trouble here in my building because I live in New York City in an apartment for screaming in the morning and clapping. So I got a little notice for screaming and clapping. But you really have to get an emotional or put all your emotions into the cantation when you're really feeling it. You can't just say, by December 31st. So it's got to be first thing in the morning where I scream it, feel it, and believe it. And then I do something very simple. I make my bed. And that completes the sleep, and that's the first thing of success in the morning. Then I meditate, and I may meditate anywhere from 30 seconds up to 10 minutes, depending on not only how I feel, but what I have set for the day. And then I'll work out. And my workouts, people think, oh, you work out an hour a day. I don't. I work out anywhere from 10 minutes to 15 minutes each day. And then I take a hot sauna. I'm fortunate enough to have a hot sauna in the building. I take a hot sauna and then I end it with a cold shower. So those are my rituals every morning. And if I feel I can win the morning, I can win the day. And it really sets not only a tone for my body, but it sets a tone for my mind. And it's all about the mindset. And what people have to realize is that it's your behavior and your rituals that make the biggest difference in your life. Because what happens is, you know, we all have potential. But what happens is you take little action, you get crap results, and then your belief system or your BS system says, see, I told you so. So what in the morning, I take my potential, I do massive action, I get great results because I'm always succeeding while I'm doing my rituals. And then my belief system is, yes, I can do this. And waking up in the morning is one of the toughest things for people to do. But I feel that if I can win the morning, I can easily win the day. And the hardest thing is always first thing in the morning, getting out of bed and doing something that I don't necessarily want to do. I want to sleep in late. I might want to sleep to 7, 8 o'clock. But I know if I can win that, I can win anything.
So take me through what happens. You know, you mentioned the incantation, saying you're going to achieve something by a particular date. Has it ever occurred where you didn't achieve what you set out to achieve by a particular date? And if so, why do you think that happened?
Of course. So each quarter I set up goals and I post them up right in front of my door and I touch the piece of paper before I leave. And there's goals I put up there that I have in the incantation. All the goals are in the incantation. And there are some that don't come to fruition. However, it's the lessons that I learned. And it's a preparation that I learned. So say I don't get a speaking engagement, I may be prepared for another speaking engagement. If I don't get a client that I really wanted, I'll be prepared for another client. So it's always something where you prepare for the opportunity. Don't let the opportunity prepare itself for you, because then you may not be ready. So there are, if I put up 10 goals each, I may hit 4 or 5, and people say, well, look, you do all that stuff, you only hit 4 or 5. But then I say, well, listen, if you're batting 300 in Major League Baseball, you get paid $300 million. I mean, get paid, you know, $100 million a year batting 300. So if I'm getting 4 or 5, I know if I didn't do anything, I may be only getting 0 to 1. So I always look at that Major League Baseball where they're getting paid so much money for batting 300 out of 1,000. So I look at it like that, and that's how people should realize it, as opposed to saying, oh, well, you know, I want to make $100,000 a year and I only made 70. Well, you made 70 because you did these things. If you didn't do these things, you wouldn't make 70, wouldn't be so close to 100. So we always have to take in consideration that you may not accomplish everything you want, but you are preparing yourself for another opportunity down the line.
What's the death theory?
So the deathbed theory is this. It's, I live each day like it's going to be my last. And what people should do is they need to define their dash. And that's my brand. It's Define Your Dash. It's between your death date, your birth date, and your death date. So what I envision to myself is that if I start preparing for the last day of my life, and my goal is to have 10,000 people at my funeral, and they all come to my son and say, you're going to choke me up again. they're going to say, you know, your father helped me with this. Your dad helped me with this. So each person that I talk to, each person that I come in contact with, whether it's for 30 seconds or it's like this, we're talking, I want them to say, you know what? That kid is right. That kid has passion. And if he can do it, I can do it. And I always want to teach my son kindness. I want to teach my son that you have the capabilities and the opportunities. And I always want to teach him in the sense that you have to live each day like it's your last, because you never know when it's going to be. So the deathbed theory really is, in a sense, living out your legacy, defining that dash between birth date and death date, and taking advantage so you never have to say what if before you die.
So living each day like it's your last, how do you then do the thing? If today was your last day, how do you then make sure you're doing the things to prepare for the future every day?
Sure. So I never know when God's going to take me. I never know that today may be my last breath. It could be your last breath. What I do each day is that I prepare for the best possible present. And what I mean by that statement is that I prepare my mind, my body, for if an opportunity comes and presents it to me. Like I woke up this morning and I had a feature in a magazine. And it was something that I just been preparing for, if I could talk about a client, if I could talk about this, if I could talk about this. So when the interview was given to me, it happened in 15 minutes, as opposed to, oh, I can't do it now, I can't do this, and not even prepared for it. So I always prepare for the present, and I also prepare for the opportunities that may be ahead of me in the days to come. So to answer your question, I really just focus on the present moment, but I prepare my body for the opportunities and my mind for opportunities that hold themselves later in my future.
So what happened with the magazine? Like, how'd that come to be? How did you visualize that? And did you say like what you would say if asked certain things? Like, how'd that go in your mind? And then how'd that go in reality?
Sure. Well, it's in my incantation. I say by December 31st, 2021, I, Jay Cardiello, accomplish this by doing this, 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 and this. I can see it, feel, and believe it. So in my incantation of what I say, I want media opportunities. I want things where people can hear my voice, so I can impact people. Things where I can influence people to become kinder, become more passionate, and take the most advantage of their life. So I felt that I summons that each and every day, than just saying, "Oh, you know, I wish I can get an article. Hopefully, someone writes something interesting, and you know, I can be part of it." So I summons it first thing in the morning, each and every day. Now I can do that for a year, and then all of a sudden it comes up. But again, it's like the final shot in a basketball game. You can miss every shot throughout the whole game, and all of a sudden you hit that one final shot, the winning shot. Nobody even cares about all the misses you have taken.
Yeah. So how do you go about figuring out that is what you aim for, right? Like, let's say somebody is is trying to figure themselves out, trying to figure, what do I even want to want? How do you go about figuring out that process?
You know, in business school, they ask you, you know, if you had a gun to your head, what do you, you know, what would you do? It's not, it's thinking about going back to that deathbed theory. People on their deathbed don't ask for more money. They want more time. They want to spend more time with their children. They want to have maybe written a book. They may have wanted to produce a movie, write a screenplay, or be a better teacher. So, and impact children differently. So when I summons it first thing in the morning, I'm putting it out there in the universe saying, this is what I want. This is what I can do. And this is how it's going to happen. Whether it happens today, whether it happens tomorrow, even if it doesn't happen, I'm telling myself each and every day that it is going to happen. And I have a belief system in that. And what happens is that it's something that when you place it in your mind, you plant a seed. Saying it enough and believing it enough, you're watering it for that flower or that plant to grow. So if you put negativity in your head and you think about it all the time, it's going to grow into negativity. It's going to sprout in your mind. All I'm doing is planting the seed and then watering each day with my incantation.
Okay, so let's say you have a person who just graduated college and they're like, okay, I see a million different opportunities here. I see this, that, or the other. Like, what? I know that what's important is what's going to be on my deathbed, but I don't even know how I'm going to be feeling at 85 years old, 90 years old, 100. Like, how am I even going to be feeling? What's going to be important to me?
Like, there's a great book out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. There's a great book out there called What Color Is Your Parachute? And it's one of the first books I read when I graduated college, and it really sets the tone of what do you want? Who are you? And that's what I had to ask myself. And then I asked myself, how am I going to become that? So to answer your question for college kids, say you come out and you're like, I don't even know what I want. Well, who are you? What would you like to do? If you had all the money in the world, or there wouldn't, you know, my parents asked me that question. If you had all the money in the world and or money wasn't a factor to you, what would you want to do? And the one thing I always said is I would like to teach. And that's what I'm doing. I'm just teaching people. So first off,
why did you say that?
I wanted to teach people.
Yeah.
I grew up with a learning disability, and it wasn't so much that I had dyslexia or anything. It's just that sometimes words don't make sense on a page to me, how they would to other people. So my reading comprehension skills were just completely off. So what I learned through my studies is that there's three different ways to learn. There's kinetic, there's auditory, and there's visual. So I'm a kinetic learner. I like feeling. It's almost like when I was in the NFL, you have this thick playbook and you're like, well, athletes are dumb or whatever. How can they learn? Well, the thing is the guys get in there and they're like, I'm going off on a tangent, but they're like, think about it. You're pressing through the door. Your dad just ran out. You got to block him from getting back in away from your mom. Protect your mom. They relate to that. They create rapport. So for me, I wanted to become a teacher because I wanted to reach people for people who felt they were unreachable or people who have been put aside and said, it's not for me. I can't do it. Well, yes, you can do it. And that's all I am. All I am is a mirror in front of people showing them that they have the capabilities and the possibilities to do anything and everything they ever wanted to do. It's just that we have to find a way not only to create rapport with the person, but to learn how they're going to accept communication. Is it visual, kinetic, or is it auditory? And if you're a lot of teachers out there are just auditory, they're not giving the visual. But if they're visual and auditory, they're not giving the feelings. And that's why sometimes – you know, you see in the urban schools, their scores are so low, or the scores are that is because, and yet they go out in the practice field and they're crushing it. And the playbook is the most intricate thing you'll ever see in your life besides being taught at NASA, is because they're working on kinetics, they're working on feelings, and they're feeling it, and they're creating rapport, and they're giving in the sense like you're blocking your father away from hitting your mom. So a kid accepts that, he understands that, and he says, okay, now I got to close the A gap. I got to block it out and push the guy to the right, get him out of the door and get him out of the house. That's why, you know, Under Armour has a thing, protect our house. But when I remember I was speaking to a football team in the urban area, I was saying, protect that house, protect your mom, protect your mom. And that's what it is. And people say, it clicks with them right away. And they're like, oh, wow, I understand that. It makes sense to me. So I always say, I'm not a coach. I'm not a celebrity trainer. There's no TMZ behind me. There's nothing like that. All I am is a teacher. I'm a teacher of you. And how you're meant to be taught, I'm going to find a way to convey the message to you to believe in yourself more.
I like to say that the more inner work you do, the more of a mirror you become. Mm. And the cleaner your mirror is. And so it's very reaffirming to hear you say, all I am is a mirror, because what led you to say that? What led you to believe that you are a mirror?
Sure. I always say I have three traumas in life. And I say traumas, to me, they're celebrations. I was sexually abused between 6 and 9. Breaking the spine was another. And then I went bankrupt and homeless after a divorce. And that was just 4 years ago. So whatever people throw at me, they're like, well, you don't understand. Yes, I have. You don't understand. Yes, I have. You don't understand. Yes, I have. So I feel like God put those points in my life that I can create rapport with other people, and all I am is a mirror to them. So if someone says, well, you don't understand, I don't have any food to eat at night. Well, I've been there. I never had the times that I didn't have food. You know, when I grew up, my family was on food stamps. You know, I was homeless. Well, you don't understand. You know, you have money. Well, there was a point where I didn't. Well, you don't understand. I'm in pain. Well, I had the best pain. It's a back pain. The majority of people suffer from back pain. So I can create for them a mirror to see themselves and say, hey, listen, thank you for being that vehicle to make me. I don't do anything. I just show them who they are.
Wow. So with that last tragedy in your life, or that last opportunity, how you called it, mm-hmm. of being homeless like 4 years ago, what were the first steps you took to get out of that situation?
So the first step I took was, my dad taught me a thing. He said, and you're going to see, you're hearing me say, he was my greatest mentor. He said, your greatest strengths are arm's length. So I reached out, knocked on every door of a person that I knew just to find a couch. Hmm. And I said, okay, I got a couch. From that, what can I do? Can I sweep your stoop? Can I wire your way, buy your groceries for you? What can I do? Remember, at the time I had a child. So I did, my son wasn't living with me because I couldn't afford a place to put him in. What I did is that I just said, every opportunity that is given to me or provided for me, I'm going to take full advantage of. So if someone offers me a hand, I'm going to reach out to that hand and I'm going to hold it and say, I need help. And then what I did is I got a mentor group and I started a mastermind group with guys that were going through divorce and guys that were going through trauma and a lot of stuff. So what happens is that when we as men, I'm just speaking as men, it could be women as well, but we as people, when we go through a lot, we sometimes call people and say, oh, you want to hear how bad my day was? And then the other person says, oh, this. But what I did is I formed a group with five strong men that we didn't want to hear that, the woe's me quote. We wanted to hear, woe's me, but now what are you going to do? How are you going to do this? And I took every meeting that was given. I took every job that was given. And I took every opportunity that was given until I got back on the horse and was able to ride again.
Was there a moment where you said to yourself, oh my God, I was just homeless this long ago and now I am in a completely different position, or I feel better, I feel different? Was there a moment when you realized your progress? And if so, what was that like?
You know, I was laughing to a friend of mine a while back, and I said, you know, I used to go get toilet paper from hotels. There's a lot of hotels in New York City, and I used to steal their toilet paper. I used to go to my friend's workplace and ask him if I could have the food or eat at the food court that had in his building. So there was a time, answering your question, where I was like, wow, you know, back then, you know, I don't take for granted, this may sound so trivial, but I don't take for granted a napkin because it was a time in my life where I had to go to a hotel just to get toilet paper and a napkin. And then that may seem so, you know, as I said, mentioned trivial, but to me it's not. And that's why I say I don't take advantage of what I have. I'm very thankful for the opportunities I'm given, and I'm very thankful for what I have, because there was two points in my life when I grew up and 4 years ago where I didn't have.
It must give you a completely different perspective on life, a feeling of gratitude whenever you do interact with things that you once couldn't. And so one thing that I want to ask you about is you said, write your goals down and make them as attractive as possible. When you were homeless, were you writing down your goals? Is that part of how you got to a place of not being homeless and back on the horse?
Yeah, I had a book. I had Unlimited Power. And in the back of that book, I ripped it up. It was Tony Robbins' book, and I wrote all my goals. I wrote everything out, and actually wrote it on a legal pad I had at the time. I wrote my incantation out, and I just read it as much as I can throughout the day. Because what happens is this: what you say you become, but also who you attract. And words are the most poignant and most powerful things that we have in our lives. And I always say there should be what we call, jokingly say this, but there should be a tongue gym. You know, because we need to train that muscle in our body, our tongue, about what we're saying to ourselves, how we're saying it to ourselves, and how we're using it in a sense to attract goodness to us, attract opportunities to us. So while I was homeless, I was taking that book, The Unlimited Power, and I would have everything written in it, and I would have the legal pad, piece of paper stuffed in it of my incantation. So it was at that point, each and every day, at least 5 times a day, I was reading my goals and reading my incantation. And I knew at that time that if I can remember it and put it into my frame of mind where I can at any point just say it, I know I owned it and I know it would become it.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd love for you to share it if that's possible, or if it's too personal, don't worry about it. But
no, I'll take it. I'll take some stuff out. I say by December 31st, 2022, I, Jay Cardiello, will accomplish. I can't say what I'm going to accomplish. I see it.
Why can't you say it? Why can't you say it? Because some people, this is why I ask, because some people have it where they can put out their goals into the universe. They like putting it out. And other people say, no, I this is personal to me. And I respect both camps. And I'm just curious for you why you're of the camp that I don't like to say it before it's actually materialized.
All right, I gotta stand up because for me, it's not about saying it like, hey, you know, this. I got a summons got in and I gotta go for it. All right.
Let's do it.
By December 31st, 2020, I, Jay Cardiello, will earn an excess of $1 million. I will earn this money by seeing, feel, and believe it. I could believe it. I could see it. I could do it. Each and every day, I summons God into my heart. I call into my favor. God is my wealth. God is my strength. And here I come, Lord Jesus.
Wow. I love that. Oh, my God.
So I'm doing that every day at that vocal point. I probably just woke up my neighbors again. But the thing is that I put a big number out there. And I'm not saying that's what I earned. Right. I'm not saying that's what I'm going to make. But I put it so high that's what I know I'm capable of. For some people, it may say, I, Jay Cardiello, by December 31st, 2021, will buy a new house. I will do it by doing this. I could see it, feel it, believe it. I summons God into my heart. So the biggest thing is that I put it up a number so high so I can try to get as close as I can to it. Mm-hmm. Now, if I say I'm going to get $100 and I earn 25 cents, I'm still going to be saying $100. People say, well, you're out of your mind. Why are you putting up so high? Why are you setting the bar so high? Because someone's got to accomplish it. Why can't it be me?
Yeah.
Why can't it be me? And that's one thing is that, Danny, we live in a society, you know, we're all going through a pandemic and everything like that. And we're all struggling. we're all struggling financially. It doesn't matter what you have or you don't have. We're all struggling. The thing is that we're all capable of more than what we're doing. And it's not about finances. You know, to me, success is happiness. To me, success is having peace of mind. So for someone, it may be just wanting to be able to walk. And maybe that's just wiggling their toes. Maybe that's just something to do every day, but you got to summons. And if you don't believe in God like I do, maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's Jehovah. Maybe it's Allah. Maybe whoever it is. Maybe you don't even believe in God, but you have to summons some higher power. Maybe it's just the universe, and you call her into your heart each and every day. So when I get into it, now my heart's pumping. When I get into it, the thing is that I let it take my body over, and it's like wearing a cape. It's like being Superman or Superwoman, because the fact of the matter is that when you say it enough, you talk it into fruition. Whether it's good or it's bad, whatever you talk about, the majority of time you will talk it into fruition. If you hear people, I'm gonna get in a car accident. The reason being is that you've talked it into fruition. It's quantum physics. You know, people think this is something that's so hokey and pokey. But the fact of the matter is that how many people ask, you know, same poop, different day. Well, it's not the same poop every day. You're just saying it's the same poop every day because you're setting your rituals. Now, we all have rituals. And whether they're good rituals or they're bad rituals, all I do is I ask myself to make these rituals at 5 a.m. to get my body and my mind ready. It was myself talking to me, because at the end of the day, I know that the only person I got to look at in the mirror is myself. So when I get into that incantation state, I get revved up. I get ready to go. I start clapping, hooting, hollering, because it's only about me, and it's not being – and I always tell people, we got to be more selfish. And what I mean, it's positive selfishness, because you have to become stronger in your mind to be stronger for your kids. I have to be stronger for myself to be a better father, to be a better fiance, to be a better person to her children, to be a better person to you and to others around me. So how I work on myself is that I become better so I can become better for other people.
You mentioned a really interesting idea, which is like you got a superhero cloak around you. And there is this idea that I recently read about called like a shield, a protective shield that some of the top golfers have used over the years and top businessmen, which is they cover themselves in a shield. So throughout the day, there is... when somebody says something like something negative or something they don't want penetrating their soul, it just bounces off them. Mm. And I just found that to be an interesting idea and maybe something you could use or something you've heard before.
I've never heard it, but it's very interesting. I look at the great Tom Brady. You know, when we think about him and when he's playing football, you know, he's in his zone. You can experience the same thing. I'm not saying you're gonna play in the Buccaneers and play in a Super Bowl last year, but you can experience the same thing. I don't let people take rent up in this space right here. Mm-hmm. The only person I let take rent up here is myself. I feel other people. I see other people. I hear other people. But to have them affect me, I hate to say the word, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I let myself down. And I'm my own best friend, and I can't let my best friend down. And that's one thing we have to start doing, is we have to start treating ourselves like we treat our best friends. Now, if you treat your best friend badly, then listen, you got to get some new friends. You got to start working on yourself. We don't talk to our friends or our best friends the way we talk to ourselves every day. And that's one thing. If I think about the shield and the protective gear, is that if you're getting ready for a putt and people are like boo or whatever or talking bad or the rain's going, it's the shield, it's the covering, it's that protective armor that you're wearing. And, you know, it's so reminiscent of what we see with Superman and Spider-Man and all the ones that wear the costumes, because when they're in there, you gave a great analogy, is that it's a superhero costume. because when they're in there, when they're in their costume, they have unlimited power and they're being the best themselves and they're using all the capabilities that God gave them.
Reminds me of Mamba mentality and how Kobe goes into that new place of using Mamba as his shield, as his way of being on the court so that he's ruthless, so that he can do whatever it takes to become the best version of himself on that court as possible. So for you, it's the incantation. Do you have a superhero or a identity that you go to when you want to be the best version of yourself?
To be the best version of myself, to jump into the suit. Well, that's a deep question to ask. It's not that I see myself going into an armored suit or wearing a cape. It's almost like putting earplugs in. It's only listening to what I'm telling myself, and I say my mantras. And even when I'm going through I go on daily walks for 20 minutes each day, and I just say to myself, repeat to myself, I am strong, I am powerful, I am strong, I am powerful, I am strong, I am powerful. I may add some other words in there, but I keep on saying I'm strong, I'm powerful. And I notice when I say that, all of a sudden everything just gets lifted up and I'm almost in a protected state. Even if the wall around me is falling apart, if I say I'm strong, I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'm powerful, I know I can see myself wearing a big S in the chest or whatever it may be.
I'm strong, I'm powerful. You know, William James has such an interesting observation, which is that if we change our mind, the external changes. If you change the internal, the external. And he discovered this 100-something years ago. And so, but what's different about our world today versus William James's, which I think he said that in like 1896 or like some a long, long time ago. And what's different about our world today is that we have more inputs than ever before. We have more people trying to attack our attention, attack our mind. You know, advertising works. There's a reason why people pay $3.5 million for a Super Bowl ad, because they know that in some sense it's going to impact your mind. Let me just break this down here. Somebody is willing to pay $3.5 million for 30 seconds of your time. Think about how valuable your 30 seconds of your time is. So I guess my point is that we have more inputs coming in than ever before. Mm-hmm. So what do you do when you notice all the inputs? In New York City especially, it's inputs, 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 nonstop, nonstop. So, and not all that you choose necessarily. So what do you do when you find a huge amount of inputs coming in and you're like, wow, I didn't choose those things and now they're coming in and now I know those are going to impact me in some way?
Mm-hmm. The first thing I do is I listen. I can reach a client, I can reach a friend, I can reach my fiance, I can reach whoever it may be by listening to somebody else's troubles, listening to the noise. Whether I accept to take it into my heart or my mind is another thing. But I always say you learn lessons from losing. You don't learn lessons from winning. So if there's a lot of losses going around me and a lot of negativity or a lot of noise, I learn lessons from them that I can possibly instill or to create better rapport with people or to create initial rapport with people. So I listen to the noise. I just don't have to absorb them or let them be part of me.
So like ads coming in, tweets you don't want to see, Instagram posts you don't want, like you notice it, but you don't actually let it be part of you. Is there anything you do mentally to make that happen?
Again, it's my mantras. It's really my mantras. I've really gotten into them. What you tell yourself is, as I said, what you become and who you attract. And that's why I'm saying what you say to yourself is so imperative. So whenever I have bad days. We all have bad days. I set a time for the amount of time that I can listen to the noise or get into the noise that's negative, and then after that, I'm out. I have to get out.
What's the time? What's the time?
I give myself 90 seconds.
90 seconds.
Yeah, I have to
just wallow in the pity or whatever it is that you're feeling in that moment, and then you say, okay, I'm out.
Yeah, because you know, you never know when you could be the last chapter of someone's life or the first chapter of someone's life. So if they meet me and I'm wallowing and all upset and it's their first time, then they're gonna walk away, and the close of the chapter is, oh, Jay's always depressed. Mm-hmm. It was just, and I maybe, you know, it could be 15, 30 minutes one day of wallowing. It could be the first initial meeting of someone, and if I'm wallowing, they may say, oh, I don't want to hang out with that person. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I do my best to have it in private. I also do every Thursday at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, I have my mastermind group. So I bring any problem, any frustration, any trial that I'm going to, and I give it to them, and I allow them to handle it. Some people have therapists, some people have psychiatrists, psychologists, counselors, whoever they may see. Save it for them, keep a journal of it, and share it with them. And give yourself a set time where you can say, okay, maybe it's not 90 seconds, maybe it's 15 minutes you start the first time. Negative attracts negative, positive attracts positive. Positive does not attract negative. It doesn't. And negative does not attract positive. It doesn't. It can't. We do it in math. So we have to understand that what you say yourself and how long you say it can have a huge impact not only in your life, but it could be the first or last chapter of somebody else's.
How come it is when we have these negative thoughts and we say them out loud, sometimes it feels better inside? Like, how come you go to a therapist, you explain your problem, you tell the negative situation, and I feel a weight off my shoulders? What's going on there?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I have my mastermind group.
Right.
Because I know collectively in the group, I feel confident enough and secure enough that I can give them and instill them that the issues that I am going through, to the negativity that I am going through, and we're going to constructively build it. So the weight is off my shoulder and I do let it go. That's why if you don't have someone to talk to, maybe you can't even afford it, is that you get it out and you do it in a constructive way. Maybe write it down in a journal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what people do is when they start writing it down, you don't want to write all negative down, but sometimes you realize that, wait, I'm always feeling these days on Monday. Why is that? Well, Monday may be the first day of the week. Monday may be the time you run into the neighbor you don't like. Maybe it's the time that you hear from a relative on Sunday night and it's affecting you Monday morning. So journaling is a great way that you can get it out. Now, screaming and yelling it out, I do that. When I go on my runs, there are private places you actually can find here in the city where you can scream. I do it right by the river and I just get it all out because I don't want to hold on to it. Because again, it's almost like bad food. People don't enjoy bad food. I'm not saying unhealthy food. I mean like bad food. So why would someone want to be around a bad person that is just full of negativity all the time? People are not going to want to do that. They're going to want to, as they go back to that first or last chapter, they want to read the context of the book, or the context of your life, that you're actually empowering them, giving them something, being kind to them and loving them.
I want to ask you about a situation where, you know, you mentioned before how powerful your tongue is, right? And speaking things into existence. And, you know, it's really interesting. You can go through certain periods of your life where you speak anything. It feels like you can speak anything into existence. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. The world is flowing. You set out an intention. You achieve it. You accomplish it. And there are other times in your life where that doesn't happen. Or at least I'll speak for myself. And what is happening on those times where at one point things were flowing, I was able to do what I set out to achieve, and other points I couldn't? What is going on there?
So to answer your question, I answer kind of oddly, is that athletics gives the best picture of life. You see a picture on a major league or minor league, whatever you want, or a baseball team, and they throw a strike, and all of a sudden they throw, and it's hit out of the park. It's hit out of a home run. That's us. That's life.
Yeah.
And what the athlete does, and why the professional is the professional, why the professional is a pro, is because they can control their mind. And that's one thing I always try to tell people, is that if you think about it, that's why we, you know, baseball and basketball, in my opinion, are some of the best things we can view, not for just the athleticism, but for the mindset. If you look at a, you know, a picture and he throws it out, he may throw his glove or scream or yell, but the next day it's gone. It's over. What we do as humans who are athletes on a different field is we wallow in it. And you have people who are hitting 300 and they're getting paid millions of dollars. And they're, if you ever told a person you get three wrong or you get seven wrong on a test and you only get three right, I'm a failure. No, you're not. You're a Major League Baseball player. So I used to take my son to a lot of basketball games, and I used to watch him. We used to say, how many shots did he make? How many shots? Oh, he missed. Is he quitting? No. Is he yelling? No. Is he throwing? He may throw the towel, we'll come bench, but the next day, it's gone. Why is that? That's why a pro's a pro, is because they have the ability and the mindset that as soon as it's over, the next day starts and it's gone. They don't think about it. Even on a losing team, they're still playing. If you look at, you know, our New York teams this year, they didn't do well. But the fact of the matter is that the Jets came out and played hard, and they almost beat the Buccaneers. So the thing is that they had a losing record this year. Not saying they have it next year, but they had a losing record this year. But each game they played, they didn't play as if they had never played football in their life. They played to win. And that's what we need to do. We have to understand is that a new day is a new chapter. You're the author of it. You have the ability to write anything you want. If you want it to be negative, it's going to be negative. If you want it to be positive, it can be positive.
So you mentioned before about how the bed or waking up out of bed could be the most difficult part of somebody's day. What can somebody do to make sure that it's not?
Mm-hmm. Set up the night before. You know, Mel Robbins has a thing. She has a 5-4-3-2-1 countdown. I tried that. It does work. You know, I get out of bed at 5-4-3-2-1 and I get up. But what I find that works for myself and may work for other people is I prepare the day before. I've already written down my list for tomorrow. I've already had my clothes put out. I've already put a place where my sneakers are, so I trip over in them in the morning first thing, so I know it reminds me I got to go to exercise. So it's preparation. Preparation is key to life. And that's one thing I always tell people is that if you want to do something first thing in the morning, just do one thing, make your bed. And then the next day, make your bed. And then the next week, maybe make your bed and have a glass of water. And then the following week, do an incantation. And it's just something that you create these small little steps that equal these big results. So preparation is the key, in my opinion, to have a winning morning.
What are you most proud of, Jay?
My son.
Why?
Definitely my son. It's the most amazing thing when you have someone that kind of looks like you. It's the most amazing thing that he has some mannerisms. And it's the most amazing thing that you get the ability to teach someone day in and day out that you love, that you love unconditionally. And that's the most thing I'm proud of is my son, Max.
What's been the most impactful lesson from his perspective that you've given him? Is he old enough? How old is he?
He's 9, so he's still a little wet behind the ears. But one of the biggest things, I was a soccer coach once, and when I used to tell the guys at halftime, or the children at halftime, is that if we were losing or down by a goal or two, is that I would give a scenario again in the basketball game, and I would give the scenario again in the baseball players. And they were like, I never forget, one kid was like, he only hits 300? I'm like, yeah, and he gets paid millions of dollars. So listen, if we win 300%, if we win, you know, we have a 300 record, hey, that's a great record. You know, we are winning. So the biggest lesson that I've given to him and that I've seen him do, that it's okay. There's no such thing, in my opinion, as mistakes. It's all lessons. And it's hard for a kid, you know, at such a young age, to be on a he was on a losing soccer team this year, and one of the things he had and learned not only from myself but from the coach that listen, I want you to remember this feeling and what it feels like to lose. What lessons are you learning from it? And then you go out the next time and aim for the feeling that you want and think of the lessons and the experiences that you can curate to become a winning team. And that's one thing that people need to understand is that losses, not hitting your goals, are awesome. They're the best lessons and the best teachers of life. If I had a son that was always on a winning team, I'd be kind of scared, because he wouldn't, not in a sense knows how to lose gracefully, but in the sense that what experiences is he really gaining from winning every time? Because he may go later in life, and if he starts losing, not in soccer, but just in life, maybe at a job, or maybe a divorce, or maybe a breakup with a girlfriend. So lessons need to be learned the most when we lose, not when we win. Hmm.
You know, you mentioned before about how you went for one more jump, and that jump ended in one of the three big defining moments of your life. Did you ever have fear about going one more rep, one more set in the future when working out, or just in life in general? Did you ever have that fear about one more being a negative because of what that moment was for you?
To answer your question, probably no. I like to leave, whether it's in the gym, whether it's in life, whether it is, I like to leave everything I have on the floor on my life. I like to go to bed exhausted. I like to know that I gave the best of my abilities, and the people that I reached and the people that I talked to and the people that I interacted, just like yourself, that they took one thing I said and it made them think. And that's all I want to do. It's not necessarily coming in and people who listen to this and they're changed because of what I said. No, I just want you to think one thing that I said maybe impacted your life enough that you possibly want to become the best version of yourself. So to answer your question, no, it was a scary thing. It's just that's how I always modeled my life, learning from my father. And even I teach my son. I remember we stood on the basketball court and I wouldn't let him leave. He was 8 years old at the time. I wouldn't let him leave until he made a shot. And we stood there for a half hour. It was a half hour until he made a shot. And he's crying and yelling at me and everything. But then it went in and we were screaming and jumping because we didn't remember the 30 minutes that it took to make the shot. We just knew that he did it because I didn't want him to walk away from it, because he could walk away from something later in life.
What gave you the patience to stick with it for 30 minutes?
Somebody had to, because to answer the question, Danny, is that there's going to be a time where he's going to get frustrated in school. There's going to be a time where he's going to get frustrated on soccer. There's going to be a time where he's going to get frustrated in life, maybe frustrated with his wife, frustrated with something. And so many of us, we get frustrated and we walk away thinking that that's a better opportunity, a better reason for us. Now, I'm not saying that if you're doing so much that you're getting your body hurt to walk away. You know, my coach at Arkansas had a thing. He would stop us if we hit a personal record or a personal best in practice. He would say, that's it. No more. Because he always wanted us to leave on a good note. I just always, in a sense, try to find that good note, that one more rep, that one more thing, that when my son was missing those shots, I knew he had it in him that if he made it, the 30 minutes prior to that wouldn't have mattered at all. And it didn't.
I think that's a beautiful place to come to a close here. Is there anything else you'd like to mention or say?
Danny, it was an honor to be on your show. You do a great job and thank you so much for having me.
It was an absolute pleasure, and we'll put all your social links below. I really appreciate you taking the time. And where can people find you?
They can find me at Jay Cardiello. It's JayCardiello.
Awesome. We'll put those below. Thank you, Jay, for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Danny. It was an honor.
Hope you enjoyed that episode with Jay Cardiello. And I just love his ability to communicate his truth so clearly. It's a beautiful thing to witness. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it, please share it with somebody who you think would enjoy it as well. Like I mentioned in the beginning, you could make it your Instagram story. You could post it on Twitter. You could do whatever you want, or just DM it to one person who you think would enjoy it as well. That would mean the world to me. But if you don't do that, I'm still so grateful for your time and attention to get through this episode. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. So if you would like to connect with me about this episode or any episode, you could follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at HeyDannyMiranda. And I hope you have a tremendous, tremendous rest of your day or night. I will see you in the next episode. And it's great to be back. Peace.